In 1975, Jaws was released. It is routinely regarded as one of the greatest films of all time and is generally credited with creating the concept of the summer blockbuster. In 1978, in an obvious cash grab, Jaws 2 was released, failing to have lightning strike a second time, but presenting a generally enjoyable film. In 1983, Jaws 3D was released, shamelessly attempting to take advantage of a gullible audience. By 1987, there was no pretense of quality as Lorraine Gary and Michael Caine cashed paychecks for sleepwalking through a pointless and incredulous sequel. In 2016, Paul Spitero created Is It Jaws, in which he and a group of rotating guest hosts discuss new and old movies and place them up against the Jaws scale, which ignores some elements of the actual films and sets forth a rating scale. Jaws, an all-time great classic film. Jaws 2, an enjoyable film with some flaws but worthy of multiple viewings. Jaws 3, a moderately enjoyable film. And finally, Jaws 4, a bad movie. Please join Paul and his guests as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
TV5 brings you Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol.
Begone! Begone, you miserable little beggars, before I give you something to sing about.
Watch Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol Thursday night at 8 on TV5.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Jaws? I'm Paul Spitero, and I am here with Mr. Sean Whalen.
It is a pleasure to be here, as always.
It is a pleasure to have you here, and I'm going to start off by saying, you know, they've gotten into the habit of putting up Christmas decorations and Christmas things in the stores, like in October, and that's just way too early. But here at Is It Jaws, we are open-minded, and I think we're going to dedicate the month of December to Christmas specials this time around. What do you think? Can we get away with that, or is it too early? Is it too soon?
I like it. I actually like it. We're talking about one today, and I'm very, very into it. So I'm in the festive season.
Now, I was surprised. I did a little research. We're going to do Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol from 1962. I was a little surprised when I started to read a little bit about this that it is the first, assuming that what they have on Wikipedia is accurate, it is the first animated Christmas special for TV.
Really?
Of all the ones that we consider classics, The Grinch, Charlie Brown Christmas, all these different Rudolph, this is the first one. This was the one that paved the way for the others.
Oh, I thought those like Rankin Bass ones were like kind of the originators. I did not realize the significance of this one.
I thought they were the late 60s, but according to Wikipedia, It said it was the first ever animated Christmas special made for television and the first hour-long animated TV special, and is considered to be a holiday classic of the 1960s, ranking alongside A Charlie Brown Christmas and How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
I didn't realize this was 62 until we started doing this one. That was the thing that really struck me. I'm like, I did not realize this was that old.
I knew I had this my entire life, so I figured it was somewhere around there. Mr. Magoo, I was a little surprised to find that his first creation was in 1949. I didn't realize he had been around that long. And there is a lot of Mr. Magoo that is questionable as far as today's standards. I know that one of the cartoon sequences or, you know, series of cartoons had a very stereotypical in a bad way Asian character named Charlie.
Oh, I remember.
So, you know, there were things about it that were not up to today's way of looking at things. This particular special, I don't think, has any of that in there. So I think we're good on this one.
But you don't see a lot of Mr. Magoo like re-airing anywhere. That was interesting when you suggested doing this one. I started thinking of something like, I haven't seen any Mr. Magoo in years. any, because we see a lot of our animated features, you know, pop up on Boomerang or just a wide variety of those pieces. Mr. Magoo is not one of those that's popped up anywhere.
Well, it did, the character did stay around, though. They did make the live-action movie with Leslie Nielsen, I think that was around 2011. So, I mean, the character was around. I do think, though, to be honest, that the character's voice acting by Jim Backus was so definitive for him that it makes it hard to do anything without Jim Backus around.
I would agree. There is something about there's an endearing nature to the voice that works really well.
I think one of my favorite things, I mean, this is going to be really silly, but one of the things that I find endearing about it is after he finishes a sentence, very often he finishes it up with, ha, ha, and that just makes him likable, because everything he says in fun, or he's having fun and enjoying every moment.
Even when, like, because this movie, there's points in time where he's, for obvious reasons, he's not likable, and they found a right balance of you haven't taken him so far to the dark side of Scrooge that you completely lose Mr. Magoo, but it's just a great job of skirting the lines of keeping this endearing character who the stage play choice of this one, I think, was excellent.
Yeah, I think that was very creative.
Yeah.
To actually, and for people who may not be familiar with this special, first of all, I'm going to tell you, seek it out. This is a great Christmas special.
Yeah.
It opens up, he's the character of Mr. Magoo. He is not Ebenezer Scrooge. He's Mr. Magoo, and he's a Broadway actor. And he's traveling over to Broadway to get on the stage and to portray Ebenezer Scrooge in a play. So the entire show, even though it's fully immersive into the story, once the story begins, is technically a stage play. It's an animated stage play. So it's a very strange thought. I don't know how you'd even come up with that idea, but I think it's very creative and it really works.
Do you think it was to protect the character of Mr. Magoo? Like, I mean, just in the sense of, you know, if you're framing it up as a stage play, it's Mr. Magoo acting like Scrooge. It's not Mr. Magoo being Scrooge. I don't know. I mean, it was an interesting choice because I didn't expect that kind of being the pathway. I expected it just to be like what we're used to, I think, with these Christmas specials. When they do variations of A Christmas Carol, they usually just dive right in and immerse you in the world of Charles Dickens. This one did the stage play thing with your typical Mr. Magoo shenanigans.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's fairly true to the Christmas Carol story. I don't think there's really much where they veer off of it. You know, they may have eliminated some aspects of it just to kind of fit it into that 1 hour. But other than that, it's pretty well done. We talked years ago on the show about the Muppet Christmas Carol. And one of the things that I came back with, and I've said this on many occasions in conversations, is it works because Michael Caine, playing Ebenezer Scrooge in that, doesn't treat it like he's on the stage with a bunch of Muppets. He treats it as if he's Ebenezer Scrooge and these are real characters. And I feel like this, you know, even though it's set up as a stage play, it's done fairly true to the story. I don't think there's any point where it goes into farce, or really just kind of like plays with the storyline at all.
So to the point of what I said earlier about Mr. Magoo shenanigans, you know, one of the gags with him is his eyesight, right? And it kicks off very early on in the stage production, you know, with the injury of the director and things like that. You know, that's kind of a typical Mr. Magoo thing. During the actual story, though, it was very sparing. And I thought that was an excellent choice. They like let him be Mr. Magoo without going too far. It was almost exactly like what you're saying, like what Michael Caine did. They let Mr. Magoo really be Scrooge. And yeah. That's where it really worked well, because I felt like I was following the Christmas Carol throughout the whole thing. And then every so often they would, you know, they would do like the flashback to the fact that they're on stage. Clearly the commercial break kind of sequences what they were putting in there. But
yeah, like they would end the act with the curtains closing and then you'd have a commercial.
Yeah, so I mean that was that part was super cool, but I thought he played it pretty straight, and I actually really enjoyed that part of it. I didn't remember, like, what was your history with this particular special? Because I've seen it before, so it's I'm not going to pretend this is my first viewing. It wasn't, but it's been a long time since I've seen this one, and it felt very fresh to me because of the fact that I hadn't seen it in so long. But when was the last time you'd seen this?
If it wasn't last year, it would have been the year before.
Okay.
This has been a perennial favorite. Now, just by way of background, I'm the youngest of four in my family. So when I was probably 5-6 years old in the late 60s, when this would be on, my older siblings would all already consider it to be a classic, and they would oh, this is great, this is Mr. Magoo, and then you know we'd sit down. So from the start, I had it drilled in my head that this was a great Christmas special, and to be fair, looking back on it, they were, you know, they're accurate. I think this is a great Christmas special, but it was a perennial favorite of mine where every year pretty much I would watch it. And, you know, I'm sure there's years where I missed it, especially probably in my late teenage years where I might have been out when they were airing it. But for the most part, I've seen this once a year for my almost entire life.
I'm surprised this wasn't that for me. I grew up in the 70s. I mean, you know, this was Christmas specials and stuff like that. I enjoyed and loved. I did see this, and I saw this as a kid, but it was one of those like rare treats versus something that I remember seeing as a year-over-year favorite. And this easily would have been that for me, just because of the quality. I think you're right. Quality is the key for this one.
This one is, for me, as far as Christmas viewing, it's right alongside of How the Grinch Stole Christmas,
yeah,
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Charlie Brown Christmas. I would say probably those are my four favorite Christmas specials, and I would have a very difficult time ranking them. So this is, you know, it's like they're all tied for first.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is right there.
The pacing was good on it, too.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't recall what my younger self thought of it. But, you know, this had the what was more traditional back in those days to have, you know, a musical quality to it where you had several songs in there. And I don't know, as a kid, I used, you know, the song generally when I would watch things that they had the musical sequences, that would be the point where I would just kind of like phase out for a little while. So I don't remember if that's the case, but I believe there's six songs in here. And as we go through the show, I think we'll bring each of them up. But five of the six to me are very, very catchy and very enjoyable now. I don't know what I thought as a kid.
Well, and I think because of the fact that they were billing this as a stage play and stage production, I think it almost fit the whole atmosphere that they were trying to set. I agree with you. As a kid, I think I would have it wouldn't have made me stop watching the special, but I would have started zoning out after the number of musical numbers that they had. That being said, watching it now as an adult and really enjoy, I'm with you. I thought that the vast majority of them were really good. It really did feel like I was at a stage play, which is hard to do with an animated feature.
I think of when I was a kid, I've always been a big Marx Brothers fan. And when they would have virtually every movie had a little musical sequence in it, or even Abbott and Costello, they would have the Andrews sisters on to sing a song. And usually when the musical sequences would start, I would zone out. Even, you know, Harpo Marx, who is an idol of mine, when he would play the harp, it'd be like, yeah, okay, I don't really need to watch this. Although, I have to admit, when Chico Marx would play the piano, I would be glued to the screen because he would always do this thing where he would do the shotgun finger on the on the piano, which I just to this day I still find to be just so much fun. But let's why don't we dive into this and talk about you know the actual you know special. So we have the opening sequence where he's traveling to the play, and the song that's being played at that point is "It's Great to Be Back on Broadway," which is sung by Jim Backus. And it's just kind of fun. And it fits the animation, and I thought that was really cool.
It's great to be back, 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 back. Great to be back on Broadway. great to be back with the pack on top of the stack on Broadway. Telling the press, heat up a mess of those bop, 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 boppos. Flocks of socks, socks, sockos. You'll need them for sure. Outside, hit that overture. Opening night, night, flash, 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 obvious smash on Broadway. It was a fight, fight, bash, bash, but I had to crash on Broadway. I'm gonna shine, will you turn me on, like the neon that you see on Broadway. Broadway.
Where is that theater?
That surprised me because I didn't remember that. So I remembered seeing this. I remembered it being a great, you know, Christmas Carol rendition. I didn't remember that this was framed up with that. So when I started watching it for this, I'm like, what is this? And I'm with you. It was fun. I really enjoyed it. It set a different stage and mood for me, especially because that was our introduction to who Mr. Magoo is, which is the thing that I loved about this is animated specials like this. You have to remember that this could be the introduction to somebody, to the character. So what they did is they got, like I said, shenanigans before, but there's certain tropes that make Mr. Magoo, Mr. Magoo. You need to know that character. And that was a great chance to get to know that character, which isn't done usually when you do Christmas carols. It's usually just jumping right in. I liked it. I thought it was a great sequence. It was funny without going too over the top, because the balance of it is, you know, let's keep some of the silliness of Mr. Magoo in there. But this is still a serious stage play. And they kind of kept that crazy balance. Which was, it's an interesting thing to do when you're putting that in. Actually, it matches up with a lot of, you were mentioning Marx Brothers and stuff like that. It matches up with a lot of that. One of the things I loved about the Marx Brothers is I love the humor, but I love that there's an engaging story that you still want to follow. This maintained the engaging story element of it that I think was something that was pretty critical to the whole thing.
I think a good way to do this going through scene by scene is actually to use the plot as it's written on Wikipedia rather than have me try to recreate it in my mind as we're going along. So the scene we just talked about is Mr. Magoo is heading to a theater on Broadway where he's starring as Ebenezer Scrooge in a musical production based on A Christmas Carol. Due to Magoo's nearsightedness, he arrives 30 minutes late and accidentally injures the director. And then in parentheses, it says, "It's great to be back on Broadway," which is the song. Now, I remember in the cartoon, I remember the very, very little from the actual cartoon series, but I do remember that the opening sequence would show him driving a car and just kind of getting into all sorts of problems driving the car and, you know, driving it because he's nearsighted. And then the only thing I remember is like him beeping the horn and yelling out, "Road hog!" But I think that goes to exactly what you're saying, where they're introducing the character right off the bat, giving you that the nearsightedness is, you know, the primary character thing, combined with the fact that he's totally ignorant of his own nearsightedness. So, like, you know, that develops the character. And I wonder in today's day and age if that would be considered to be politically incorrect to make fun of people, you know, who have bad vision. And somebody who wears glasses at this point in my life and would be like Mr. Magoo without them, you know, I don't find it insulting at all. But I don't know if, you know, people are very sensitive nowadays. So I don't know.
I actually, it's one of the things that I always found endearing about the character. And the best part is when, you know, he will be like trying to be complimentary to somebody and he's talking to their dog or he's talking to somebody, you know, it's the shenanigans that come from just being Mr. Magoo on that end. I will say one of the things that I loved, and it's something that I think is really important. They introduce all that in the beginning, then use it subtly throughout the Christmas Carol. And I thought that was really, really important that they, to your point, they stuck to the story. And that was something that I didn't remember where this was going to go with that. And I really loved the fact that this really is a very good telling of A Christmas Carol. For if you haven't watched this, do yourself a favor for that portion of it alone.
So the next paragraph in the description is, Scrooge is a miserly money lender in Victorian London on Christmas Eve, counting money while his clerk, Bob Cratchit, is underpaid and has no coal for his fire. And then in parentheses, it has Ringle, Ringle, which is the song. Now, that's a dual song. I'm just going to interrupt the reading of it. It's because it's him singing Ringle, Ringle, Coins When They Jingle. So it's Ebenezer Scrooge and his love of money. But at the same time, there's a duet because Bob Marley is singing It's Cold, It's Cold. And they kind of do it together, and it's really well done.
Ringle, ringle, coins when they mingle, make such a lovely sound. 2 guineas and tuppence and threepence and bob, make my ears tingle and keep my heart throbbing. Crowns and coppers, little eye poppers, can make my pulses pound. Coin in a column can make me ecstatical, denominational or alphabetical. Alphabetical ringle, ringle, when they jingle makes such a lovely sound.
Cratchit! You had your call for the day, and there will be no more.
Begging your pardon, sir. I simply thought, sir, since it is Christmas Eve.
Since it is Christmas Eve, this would be a disastrous time for you, Cratchit, to find yourself without a position.
Oh, no, sir. Yes, sir, you're absolutely right, sir. Forgive me, sir.
If you spent more time tending to your job, you wouldn't have time to feel the cold. Ah, blasted help situation. You'd be wanting a feather bed and tea service next, you know. You never could be... 1,036.
Ringle, ringle,
coins when they mingle.
It's cold.
I love
it's frighteningly cold.
Please, Mr. Scrooge, please. What months are cold, Mr. Scrooge?
Crowns and coppers.
It's cold.
Little eye poppers can make my pulse
so frighteningly cold.
Humbug is giving to charity. Orphans are pesty, and Christmas a parody.
After rudely refusing two men who ask him for a donation to charity, Scrooge reluctantly allows Cratchit to take the holiday off. Scrooge goes home and gets ready for bed, but is visited by the ghost of his business partner, Jacob Marley, who has been dead for 7 years. Marley is bound in heavy chains due to his misdeeds in life and warns Scrooge that he risks the same fate unless he heeds the advice of three spirits who will visit him over the course of the night. Now, part of what works for this, what works in this special for me, is all the voice acting. And I think it's worth mentioning that they really didn't skimp on the voice actors. Bob Cratchit is played by Jack Cassidy. And I didn't realize that until I was getting ready for this. I never saw that. And then apparently, at least one of the businessmen is Maury Amsterdam. Now, if you don't know who Maury Amsterdam is, if you watch the old Dick Van Dyke show, he was one of Dick Van Dyke's co-workers, and he was very funny. But in this, he's not particularly funny. He's more playing it straight. Jacob Marley is voiced by Royal Dano, who is apparently a character actor in a lot of Westerns. So... That's where we are at this point as far as the voice acting goes. The whole scene is well done. I think it's, it gives you, and this is more a tribute to Charles Dickens than it is to the writers of this show, but the whole scene kind of gives you a little bit of Scrooge's point of view, almost to the point where it's too far so as to be a little absurd, but you can understand he's saying, well, I give my money for my taxes, which is supposed to take care of the poor people. Why isn't it taking care of them? Why do I have to give you money on top of that, the money that I've earned? So, again, they take it too far, you know, where he's saying, you know, when they say they'd rather be dead, and he said, well, if they're going to do it sooner or whatever. So, you know, they take it to the extreme, but it kind of makes sense, at least from his perspective, what he's thinking. And again, I think that's a tribute to Charles Dickens, that he writes it in a way where you say, okay, he's a miser and he's unreasonable, but I can at least understand his motivation.
The other piece too, and I totally agree with you on the motivation piece. I think that needs to be framed up by the likability of Bob Cratchit, which, to your point about voice casting, you can do these specials and kind of go, well, this is a Mr. Magoo special, so let's just focus heavily on Jim Backus and not really care about the cast. Jack Cassidy plays two of the most likable characters in this, and that's really critical because they are very likable. I really did like Bob Cratchit. I liked Dick Wilkins later. I didn't realize he played both.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that I think is pretty critical. And if you lose that in A Christmas Carol, you're missing the balance, right? Because you've got to really like the people around him in order to sit there and go, Scrooge, what are you doing with these people? You know, how are you working with this guy and not realizing you got to do something for him, or acknowledge the fact that he's loyal, he comes in, he works hard for you, and barely can scrape by. I loved the fact that they framed that up with talent that make you feel for these characters, because you can do that in an animated feature, but the critical key is who is doing the voice work.
I think they ramped that up in The Ghost of Christmas Present and Ghost of Christmas Future a little bit with Marley Cratchit and his family. So
sure.
We're going to see definitely more of that. But I do agree. Again, you know, there is a pitfall there where you could focus on Scrooge and lose the rest of it, since it's Magoo's special. So I do think that's important. So the next scene is actually The Ghost of Christmas Present. Now, I think they went in a different sequence than in the Dickens book. I think we go to The Christmas Past first with the Dickens book. But we get the scene with The Ghost of Christmas Present, and according to Wikipedia, The Ghost of Christmas Present visits Scrooge first and takes him to observe Cratchit and his family, who are counting their blessings despite their poor situation. And they sing a song, The Lord's Bright Blessing, which is a very, very upbeat tune. The ghost warns Scrooge that Cratchit's young son, Tiny Tim, who is sickly, will not survive to next Christmas if things do not change. Now, that scene, I think, ramps up exactly what you were saying. Not only does it show Cratchit to be likable, his entire family is likable. He's got the young son, Tiny Tim, who is crippled and apparently has some sort of disease that's going to kill him. But he's also, you know, he's learned from his father, and he's very upbeat. And they talk, you know, he wanted the other people to see him so that he could make them feel good about themselves and that type of thing. And again, the song is really catchy.
Will we have a gander and some razzleberry dressing? Oh, razzleberry dressing would be nice. Will we have a pudding made of liver while we're guessing? Or maybe razzleberry dressing twice. We haven't had a hen since I can tell you when. We love a hen again with razzleberry dressing. We've been so awful good, from me down to the baby, and we're not made of wood or razzleberry gravy.
We'll have the Lord's bright blessing, and knowing we're together, heart and hand, we'll make the whitest Christmas, the very brightest Christmas, a Christmas far more glorious than grand. We can't afford to have a hen. We will someday, I vow. So I suggest you dream of then and prize what we have now.
Could we have a Christmas tree and on each branch a goodie? Some waffle jelly cake would be so nice. Could we have a stocking full of presents, Father, could we? Some waffle jelly cake, perhaps a slice. And on the tree a star of shiny Christmas gold, a candle in a jar of razzleberry dressing.
We can't afford a Christmas tree. We will someday, I vow. Start smiling and enjoy with me the miracle of now.
The very brightest Christmas, a Christmas of a glorious and grand.
A very merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us.
God bless us.
God bless us, everyone.
There's a scene, a piece of dialogue in there where you see Scrooge is starting to understand a little bit, because he says something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing, how could they be so happy when I pay him just a pittance? Something along those lines.
Yeah.
So he's aware, you know, it's not that he's not aware of his miserly ways. He is. And maybe it's just coming to mind of, you know, oh, there's more to life than just money. Like, you know, it's the start of the transformation.
I actually liked that the transformation, the choice to flip, because I'm with you. I believe most of the time that I've seen this retold, it's always been the Crows to Christmas Past first. Then they take it to present day. I really liked this choice because his heart like melting a little bit with Tiny Tim, you know, and like, what's wrong with that boy and things like that. You know, spirit, are these things, you know, that can change, you know, he starts asking the questions along the way. You start seeing a little bit of heart to the guy. I liked that because I wanted to know then how he got there. And it's funny to say that with a story that I know so well, I mean, like, but that's something that this did. I'm like, okay, I know the story of A Christmas Carol. I'm like, okay, tell me how he got here. I still wanted to see it. And that's hard to do when you already know the story. That's where this one was exciting. It pulled me in. I really wanted to know more about him. I was engaged in the character of Scrooge. And they've taken this illusion of this Mr. Magoo's on this stage. And this is a stage play. Well, usually when you go see a stage play, it's the onus is on the actors to pull you in and make you during that time, give you that sense of disbelief that what you are witnessing on stage is happening and unfolding in front of you, right? This happened in this animated feature, like on a different level. I'm watching animation and yet I'm feeling this is a living, breathing world. They succeeded with that, with these sequences, because that was something that was a joy in this one, that I actually cared about what was going on with Mr. McScrooge. And that was something that I really enjoyed by this one.
I like that renaming of Scrooge as McScrooge. But anyway, worth mentioning that the Ghost of Christmas Present is the jolly large ghost who's you know, got all the riches around him and whatever. He's voiced by Les Tremaine, and voiced very well by Les Tremaine, who's an English actor. He's probably best known to anybody who would be listening to this as Mentor from the Shazam live action TV series.
a fond favorite of mine.
So the next sequence is the Ghost of Christmas Past, who visits Scrooge next and takes him back to his boyhood, where Scrooge was a lonely schoolboy and sings the song Alone in the World. The ghost also shows him Belle, a woman whom Scrooge as a young man had been courting. The moments he sees are those in which she sadly explains that she is leaving him due to his greed for money. And then the song there is Winter Was Warm. Now, Alone in the World as a song with young Scrooge kind of gets the feeling for me. I understand that it's showing the loneliness of his childhood and all of that. Winter Was Warm is the one song that I don't really care for. It feels like it goes on and it's just a little boring. The lyrics in it kind of make sense to what they're trying to show, but it's the only song that kind of makes me zone out a little bit when it's on.
It felt to me like one song too many. And because I agree with you on that one, Alone in the World was critical, because what you got to feel for is him as a child and say that this kid's been wounded. I mean, as a kid, this loneliness and everything kind of, you know, is stuck with him for his entire life, and he never really dealt with it. So it was kind of cool to see him as an adult having this soft spot for this kid, you know, which was him. I loved the duet of it. Like, I love that it started off being the child singing version of Scrooge singing it, and then him joining in and singing along. It was an excellent choice. It was moving. I really enjoyed the whole sequence. Winter Was Warm wasn't bad. I'm not like, you know, it's not like something where I'm like, oh my gosh, it just ruined the whole thing for me. It did not. But if they had removed that number or truncated it, I wouldn't have minded. Just because it didn't have the same impact that I thought Alone in the World did. But that's just a personal preference, though.
When you're alone, alone in the world, when you're alone in the world, blown the way leaves get blown in the world, swirl the way leaves get swirled, listening to your heels when you walk, making a lonely clack. You don't know it feels when you talk and nobody's voice talks back. A hand for each hand was planned for the world. Why don't my fingers reach? Millions of grains of sand in the world. Why such a lonely beach? Where is a voice to answer my? Two shoes that click to my clack. I'm all alone in the world.
A hand for each hand was planned for the world. Why don't my fingers reach? Millions of grains of sand in the world. Why such a lonely beach? Where is a voice to answer mine back?
Where are two shoes that click to my clack?
I'm all alone in the world.
Come. Let us see another Christmas.
Sure. And what that description doesn't give us is the fact that we get Fezziwig Dick Wilkins. They show Scrooge as a young man, not a child, not an old miser, and that he's excited about Christmas and he's excited about Belle and how she's, you know, rejecting everybody else because everybody's trying to court her, and she rejects everybody else because she chooses Scrooge. But then eventually his love of money turns her off and she leaves. So there is that whole character development there that is important. And the voices there are also really good because, again, we have Jack Cassidy doing Dick Wilkins. We have Paul Frees, who may be one of the greatest voice actors ever, doing Fezziwig. And Belle is done by Jane Keane, who unless my memory is wrong, she was Alice on the Honeymooners in the 1960s when Audrey Meadows was not doing the part. So, you know, it is a top voice cast there. I think if my memory is correct of the Story of a Christmas Carol, what we have there is a little bit of editing that they took out part of the story because, if I remember right, in addition to his lonely childhood, the one person Scrooge was close to as a young boy was his sister, and she dies, and then she has a child before she dies, who's his nephew, who appears in many of the versions that they show, but they don't really give the background. But he's almost cold to his nephew because it brings back the memories of his sister, who he loved, and that's part of the building of his bitterness.
Yeah,
that's why he doesn't want to let anybody be close to him anymore because it, you know, he got close to somebody and it hurt. There is a little bit of editing there, but I think for a children's production, that may have been a little too deep of a storyline to go into. And I do think they do show the whole thing with Fezziwig and Belle and all of that. And I think they get the point across pretty well in the time that they give us.
What I liked about that was you had such modeling, Scrooge, of like this really great boss, because he was defensive of the boss, even as he's going in with the ghost. You know, he was talking about, you know, what a great boss he was and what he did and those type of things. You know, I mean, like, Scrooge recognizes the fact that it was a good place to work and has a fondness, a genuine fondness for Fezziwig, genuine fondness for the boss. I really liked the way that all, you know, I mean, you know, the whole thing just played out just really, really great. His hanging out with Dick, you know, with Dick Wilkins and it felt like you wanted to be there and hang out with them. And that was something that I thought they captured well. It made me want to smack him upside the head. Like, how did you give this up? Like, you had this as a modeling. You were this lonely kid, and now all of a sudden you found friendship. You found a boss who respected you. And also the woman who, like, everybody else was being she was like, no. And she chose him. She chose him because of his heart. And he just got it so wrong. But that goes back to the wounded childhood. And I loved that everything felt like human and real. You know, it's the human flaws coming through. It's like, Scrooge, you had it all and you let it go. You could see why. And I liked that everything was believable. That which is, to your point about being a children's production, I think they cut the right things in the sense that trying to keep it, you know, kid friendly, that worked. But it's still deep. And that's something that I thought was really well done. I think the best of these type of productions are the ones that can be watched by all ages, you know, where it's accessible enough to kids. But as adults, we can watch it now and find it to be an engaging and rich story with layers. And this had, I mean, this is 1962 animated feature, and they put all of those pieces right in there. And I think it's why it lasts the test of time, is those
Agreed. Layers. Agreed. Now, the Ghost of Christmas Past is portrayed as, I believe it's a young girl. I don't know if it's, you know, I think it's supposed to be ambiguous. You're not supposed to know if it's a young girl or a young boy, just that it's a very young person. And it's voiced by Joan Gardner, who also voices Tiny Tim. And I looked her up, and she's just really known for voice acting and has done a few things that you'd recognize if you read it. But I think she does it well. And what she does, and I agree with you, is she acts as a counterpart. When he starts reliving his past and enjoying what Fezziwig is doing, she starts bringing back what, you know, his prior attitude was. Well, you know, shouldn't he do this? Shouldn't he do that? And Scrooge has to defend him. So now it's another layer or another step forward in his transformation. This isn't a transformation that just happens. It develops over the course of this this special. And I think that's very cool. And I think that goes to exactly what you're saying. It's a children's special, but it's done layered enough and done intelligently enough that you can watch it as an adult. You can appreciate the story as it's presented. And you can also appreciate a lot of the humor that's sent forth. And then, you know, there's also the element for me of nostalgia that enters into it. So between those three, you know, we have a real winner. So the next thing we have is Scrooge encounters the ghost of Christmas yet to come and is shown a vision of the future where an unloved man has recently died. Scrooge sees his charwoman, his laundress, and the local undertaker sell his belongings to a fence named Old Joe. And they sing the song We're Despicable, which it has in parentheses Plunderer's March. Scrooge begs to be shown tenderness connected with death, but discovers that Tiny Tim has died. The ghost takes Scrooge to a cemetery and shows him his own grave, revealing that this deceased man is him. Scrooge realizes in anguish that he has spent his life poorly and repents and does a reprise of Alone in the World.
Viciously, still none of us wishes he could shine. We're slick and shifty birds
with fingers quick as 50 birds.
While stealing your purse or your ticky-tock,
just for a kick we knock you flat.
La, 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 la.
Party blokes, no chitty chat and artichokes. We're twice as bloodthirsty as cannibals,
and wilder than animals are we.
We're reprehensible.
We'll steal your pen and pensible,
then sneer at you, leer at you naughtily.
And really we ought to be in jail.
Yeah, this I thought this was a great, you know, I just feel like I'm being repetitive here, but I just think that, you know, it was another great sequence. It's fun because I love the way they do Weird Despicable. I just remember watching this not that long ago and just getting a kick out of like the sequence in there. Like they sing the lyrics to the song and then in the, I guess the chorus, all they do is go la, 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 yeah, la, 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 la. And I just find it so amusing. And the animation is fun there too, because it shows, you know, like their mouths being wide open. And it's just, it's well done. And it's, you know, it's another step forward in the transformation. He sees that if he doesn't change, how horrible his death is going to be.
And that's a key, what you're talking about right there, because you're right. That sequence was funny. It was humorous. But one of the things that I really loved was the balance of they all feel truly vile. Like you see what they're bringing in from Scrooge. I mean, like they're taking like the curtains down from around his bed and, you know, rings and all. And the stuff that they were doing to him was really, really vile. And even though they do this musical number, which was great, it was a great musical number. it still never loses the fact that these are truly vile people. Like, and you could see why this would be something that Scrooge watching this is like, they're dancing and singing, and over the fact that they're stealing from me. And I love that they're getting paid like significant amounts of money for certain elements of his belongings. And the one brings something to Scrooge's and just gets like the most minimal amount of money. I love that. Like his life is being summed up into these monetary amounts versus any kind of affection, any kind of kind words, any kind of acknowledgement. He can just be violated and nobody cares. To have a money bag be dropped off as a statement of remembrance to you, that's it. That's really all. And even when they get to the point where they start having people share some memories of him at all, everything is just vile commentary, you know, because Scrooge is actually somewhat in awe of the fact that like people would feel this way about him. It's kind of a slap, you know, like kind of a slap to the face wake up call that I really liked. That I'm like, okay, if I was watching all this, I'd be kind of like, you know, scared straight too.
Well, it brings to me a memory. If you've ever seen the musical version of Scrooge with Albert Finney from 1970, when they have that sequence, there's this huge production number where they're singing the song, "Thank You Very Much." And it's "Thank you very much for the fact that he died." But Scrooge, Albert Finney, doesn't even realize they're singing about him. And he starts like singing and dancing with them in his situation, not even knowing, because he's, despite the fact that, you know, he's becoming self-aware as this goes on, he doesn't know that he's so, you know, reviled and hated, and that he, you know, his behavior was just so despicable. And I think in this, that is also shown by the people who are singing this song are being mean to each other too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, they're showing these are horrible people and they're not as bad as him, you know?
I agree.
So that's big. I think that's really well done. So next we have Scrooge awakens on Christmas morning with a renewed purpose. He meets two men from the previous day and makes a generous donation, then anonymously sends Cratchit a Christmas turkey. He later visits the Cratchits to give them a raise in pay and help nurse Tiny Tim back to health, and shares Christmas together with them. And they do a reprise of the song, "The Lord's Bright Blessing," at that point. And this, I'm going to give total credit, not only to the writing is just very well throughout this, but I'm going to give really total credit to Jim Backus and his voice acting in here, because all of a sudden the tone changes so much that you hear the hopefulness and the happiness in his voice. And it's just, you know, like you feel that transformation, and that's key to the story of A Christmas Carol. If you don't feel the transformation, and if you don't see just what a difference it is in a somewhat acceptable way, the story fails. So I think you need that at the end, and I think Jim Backus pulled it off beautifully.
Oh, no, no! Please, Spirit, please, don't leave me here alone. I'm afraid. Oh no! My bed! Oh, they are not torn down, rings and all. They are here, and I am here. The shadows of things that would have been may be dispelled. Oh, I know they will. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven in the Christmas time, he prays for this. I say it on my knees, old Jacob. Yes, I'm here. Oh, I don't know what to do. Yeah, I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. And I am as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. Ha ha! A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. I don't know how long I have been among the spirits. Yeah, I don't know anything. I am quite a baby.
He also did a great job here of bringing in some of the Mr. Magoo vision issues, you know, into this sequence, because I thought it was a good sequence where all of a sudden he's looking out the window and he's talking to the snowman. He's talking to the whole thing. I mean, again, the subtle piece of it. They didn't overdo it with that, but it added to the humor elements of it. I liked his interaction with the boy, because this was one of the carolers earlier, if I remember correctly, that he was, you know, just very rude to in the beginning part of it. Now this kid, all of a sudden, he's talking to him, and what an intelligent boy, what a bright boy, you know, those type of things. engaging him to go get this turkey.
Hello there. Whoop. Hello. Hello there. Ah, the same to you. Oh, yes, indeed. A pleasant fellow. Hello there. What's today?
Eh?
Huh, what's today, my fine fellow?
Today? Why, Christmas Day.
Whoop. Oh, it's Christmas Day, and I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. Oh, do you hear? The spirits have done it all in one night. Tell me, do you know the Polar Shop in Lexley? At the corner, do you, my boy?
Well, I should hope I did.
An intelligent boy. A remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold that prize turkey that was hanging up there? The big one.
What? The one as big as me?
Oh, what a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Yes, yes, my buck.
Well, it's hanging there now.
It is? Well, go and buy it.
Walker.
No, stay. I am in earnest. You go and buy it and tell him to bring it here. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes, my boy, and I'll give you half a crown.
A half a crown?
Oh, a fine boy, a clever boy. I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's. He shan't know who sent it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. Good heavens. Yeah, they'll need to be paid.
And I also liked the choice, because sometimes when you do a telling of this, it's known to the family, even though he says he's not going to tell them, it's known to the family that he gave the turkey. In this one, they don't reveal it. And yeah, I guess Cratchit and the family could make, you know, with his generosity, they could make that assumption. But I liked the fact that because he stuck to this, I'm going to do this nice thing for them, and they don't need to know it was me. It added to this whole sense of he has changed, because this isn't about what this can do for him or how this can up his value to people, like how he looks. He didn't do it for any benefit to himself. He did it just because he wanted to give Cratchit and his family a nice Christmas. And I liked that choice. It seems like such a weird thing to focus on, but in certain tellings of it, it's known that he was the one that like gave them this banquet. I liked that it wasn't in this one. It was, and that was a good choice.
I think that's what you're saying is all true. But I think there's another layer on top of that, that he doesn't want to be in a situation where he's buying their friendship effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
But he desperately at this point does want to be part of the happiness of their family. Mm-hmm. So when he comes over after he has all that delivered, you could see, you know, he wants them to accept him. But he plays it, you know. First he starts off mean, you know, oh, why aren't you at work? And then he says, I'm going to give you a raise in salary. So he wants to be part of this family, mm-hmm. and he is part of the family at that point. He becomes part of the family immediately, which is fitting with the character of Bob Cratchit, who's so open to him throughout the whole thing. You know, he's the one, you know, and then the Ghost of Christmas Present, he's toasting Scrooge, even though Scrooge has never been nice to him.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's all well done. And but again, you know, the whole transformation is just it brings it to a nice close, even though we still have another scene, because the musical concludes and the audience applauds. Magoo brings the director out on stage, but the stage's props, lights and scenery fall on him. Magoo proudly exclaims, "Oh, Magoo, you've done it again. And by George, I've brought the house down." And wishes both his audience and the television audience a Merry Christmas. So, you know, they close it with just the bookend of, let's see, you know, this is a play. It's not, you know, it's not real. So it's a play within a cartoon. And it's just, you know, true to the character of Mr. Magoo as he existed. And if I understand correctly, this was the basis for them, because this was so successful that they did do another, you know, cartoon series of Mr. Magoo cartoons following this, which is probably the ones that I'm most familiar with, although I have very few memories. I do know that they did other specials where Magoo was portrayed as an actor. And, you know, they did famous stories. I'm trying to remember which ones they did, but I know that they did other stories where Magoo was an actor, and I think they did like maybe like Aladdin's Lamp or stuff like that. And you know, that it's, so it did start a sequence of stuff. But this is the one that's classic. This is the one that you could still see. And if anybody's never seen this, absolutely go out of your way to see it now, because this is one of the best versions of A Christmas Carol out there. And no question about it. Not even a second thought. It's Jaws.
Yeah, it's Jaws for me too. Which is interesting because I know you've got much more of the nostalgia piece for this one than I do, as far as just growing up with it the way that you did. I had fond memories of Mr. Magoo from my childhood, mainly from the cartoon shorts. I remember seeing those and enjoying them. I remember seeing this. I don't remember seeing this. If I saw it, it's not more than once or twice before our viewing of it. And boy, this is one I've been missing out on. I really, really enjoyed this one. I think it's a must see. I think you're right. As far as if somebody's saying, hey, I'd like to see a good version of The Christmas Carol, this is one I'd recommend easily. I already told my wife and I did not get a chance to watch this together. We're going to watch. So this will be my third viewing of it. I want to watch it again for the upcoming holiday season with her, just because I think it's that good. And that says a lot when I've already watched it twice that I would like to see it a third time already right now.
Yeah, I've had exactly that experience where I watch a movie for the show.
Yeah.
And after it's done, even if I've watched it twice for the show, whatever, I say, you know, I really want to watch this with my wife because I want to see her reaction to it.
Yes, that's exactly.
And I want her to enjoy it, and I wanted to see how much fun this is. And I can guarantee you, my wife knows this and has seen it, and she wouldn't hesitate. This is not for a second.
Yeah. So it was really great. I'm with you. Aside from the one maybe musical number that they could have truncated, this is pretty perfect.
it's nearly perfect.
Yeah.
And even then, this, the one song that I wasn't crazy about, it's not so bad. It's just it was just a moment where I just started to lose my interest for a moment. That's all it was. But otherwise, pretty much perfect.
It's like a lot of movies that we watch, right? There's certain times where there's a musical number. Actually, Disney was famous for this. There was whole film sequences or, you know, whole storyboarded sequences where they had musical numbers that they left on the cutting room floor and were likely right to do it. They're interesting and intriguing. This is one that I think they could have left on the cutting room floor if they did, but it didn't ruin it having it in there either. Because it's really, compared to the other musical numbers that were present in it, it doesn't match those. And that would be the only thing I'd say about them.
And I think the reason it doesn't match them is, for the most part, all those other ones are very upbeat. Even when they're singing about how despicable they are, it's very, very upbeat. The only other one that's down, you know, that's a slower one, is when he's singing He's All Alone. And that one just kind of captures the feeling of what's going on so well that it's, you know, you don't mind it being more down. So that's it for Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol. Just, you know, bottom line, we loved it. Yeah. Next time out, we're going to continue our December Christmas special looks with a different, very, very different version of A Christmas Carol. And I'm going to give you, because I'll give you 2 weeks to try and find it and watch it before we air our next episode. We're going to do Blackadder's Christmas Carol. And if you're not familiar with the show Blackadder, you should get familiar with it, because it's a great show. And it's Rowan Atkinson at his best. I think most people know Rowan Atkinson as Mr. Bean, and that doesn't compare to his Blackadder, in my opinion, my personal opinion. Yeah. Very, very different character. Mr. Bean is much more of a character for children, whereas Blackadder is certainly not a children's show, although, you know, there's nothing R-rated about it. It's, you know, but he'd be Blackadder is PG-13, I think.
Or at least PG. Strong argument that if you haven't watched Blackadder, that the Blackadder Christmas Carol is not a bad starting point. I mean, to be introduced to it, you don't need to know anything to jump in and enjoy it.
Okay, but we're not going to give any more about the show than that. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to recommend you watch it before we get into our episode in 2 weeks, and that's why we're giving you that now. But in the meanwhile, enjoy the Christmas season, watch Mr. Magoo, watch Blackadder, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Ourselves, hate ourselves viciously. Still none of us wishes he could shine. We're slick and shifty birds
with fingers quick as 50 birds.
While stealing your purse or your ticky-tock,
just for a kick we knock you flat.
Party blokes, no chitty chat and artichokes.
We're twice as bloodthirsty as cannibals,
and wilder than animals are we.
We're reprehensible.
We'll steal your pen and pensible,
then sneer at you, leer at you naughtily.
And really we ought to be in jail.